IPU On Air, the Interparliamentary Union's podcast.
Welcome to IPU On Air, the podcast where we delve into the heart of parliamentary life and explore the pivotal roles that shape our democracies. I'm your host from the Interparliamentary Union for today, Kate Brooks, and we're lucky today to welcome Miss Kugongelwa Amadila, the recently elected Speaker of Namibia's National Assembly. Today's episode is particularly significant as it coincides with the Sixth World Conference of Speakers of Parliament in Geneva, a crucial event that brings together parliamentary leaders from across the globe to discuss and collaborate on the most pressing issues in the world. And yesterday in Geneva, we hosted the 15th Summit of Women Speakers of Parliament, bringing together women leaders in the highest parliamentary decision-making positions. In this series, Holding the Gavel Behind the Role of the Speaker, we explore the many duties of a speaker, the challenges they face, and the opportunities they seize to enhance legislative change. Miss Kugongelwa Amadila is somewhat of a trailblazer for women in Namibia. She was the first female finance minister, the first female prime minister for 10 years from 2015 to 2025, and now woman speaker of the lower house. Madam Speaker, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's begin with the basics. What do you see as your core responsibilities in the chamber as Speaker of Parliament?
I see my primary responsibility as ensuring that the agenda of Parliament is aligned with the priorities of the people of Namibia, that is first and foremost, and secondly, that the proceedings of the Parliament, specifically the National Assembly, would assist in transforming Namibia into the society that we want it to be, an inclusive, peaceful, prosperous Namibian society.
I think that's really important because you're alluding to the fact that the role is not just procedural, but you have a responsibility to Namibian society as well. How have you embraced that in your few months in office?
Yes, I have leveraged my experience in the executive for many years, where I have worked as a cabinet minister and as a prime minister to make sure that I bring the understanding from the executive to the National Assembly, and then I use my experience in the executive to support the office of the speaker to give the due prioritization to the issues that are brought to Parliament for consideration.
And you also mentioned the task of managing the legislative calendar and juggling the schedule of Parliament. How do you go about that? Do you have a team that helps you? How do you juggle all that work?
Yes, we do have a staff complement. Parliament, apart from being a legislative arm of the state, is also a public institution with a full staff complement, although we do have a lot of shortcomings that we still have to address. And in addition to that, there is a small bureau for the speaker that assists the speaker to pay attention to the issues that are brought directly to the office of the speaker.
And one of the big roles of speaker is managing debates in parliament, both, you know, giving time to the opposition and the government. How do you ensure fairness in the chamber and making sure that all members' voices are heard?
We are actually lucky in Namibia because we have what is considered to be one of the best constitutions in the world. So our forebears, those who came before us, ensured that we have a constitution that recognizes the past of division and conflict that we are coming from, and that reflects the aspirations of the Namibian people to be a peaceful nation and an inclusive, prosperous nation. And we have developed subordinate laws, and we have developed a set of rules and orders that govern the proceedings of Parliament. So the Speaker is not given an unfettered discretion, apart from the commitment that the Speaker has, of course, to ensure that you live up to the task and the mandate of a Speaker, and you are subject to the laws. I also have the responsibility as a speaker, as a primary custodian of the rules of the House and the committees of the House, to enforce those rules without any biases. And we, for example, have special courtesies that are accorded to the leader of the largest opposition party, where they can have unlimited time when they have to speak on important issues like the budget, for example. And then you also have time assigned for different types of proceedings. To ask a question, you take this much time. To answer a question, you take so much time. To have an additional question as a follow-up question, you have so much time. And that applies to everyone the same way. So no one has to feel that because I don't come from the party of the speaker, I would not have an opportunity to speak. And also the turns to speak are assigned on the basis of a request for the floor that is done electronically. So the system lines up the MPs that are asking for the opportunity to speak. So there is no subjectivity.
So the rules and procedures in Namibia really ensure this fairness.
So you don't have flexibility to ignore someone who is asking for the floor and then just prefer another person to speak many more times than other members.
And another role that the speaker has, and one of the reasons that you're in Geneva this week, is a public-facing role and representing the Parliament of Namibia to other branches of government, civil society, and here this week on the international stage at our World Conference. Could you elaborate on that responsibility and give some insights into your work on multilateralism as the Speaker?
Yes, okay. The speaker is given the responsibility and power to receive members of the public that have issues that they would like to bring to the attention of Parliament, and to receive petitions, which the speaker is also obliged to table in Parliament. The speaker also tables the reports and the budget of the watchdog institutions. And these reports are to be tabled in Parliament within a prescribed time frame, and there is no flexibility for the speaker to edit these reports. So it's practically just to make sure that there is a conduit for these watchdog institutions that are not members of Parliament to make their voices heard in the National Assembly. And with regards to government, the Speaker has the responsibility to coordinate with the Prime Minister, being the head of government administration and leader of government business in Parliament, to ensure that the priority issues of the executive receive due attention on the order paper of the National Assembly. And yes, of course, we represent Namibia also to international organizations like the IPU. And we hear stakeholders like the non-governmental organization, the bodies or the structures that represent countries that we partner with on a number of important issues. I have already talked about international organizations. So that provides us an opportunity to ensure that we leverage the benefits that come with multilateralism, which has become more important today in a situation we see a lot of disagreements that turn violent.
And as you mentioned, and I mentioned in my introduction, you were Prime Minister for 10 years before you were Speaker. How did being in that role help and inform you to take on the role of Speaker?
It enabled me to understand the executive functions, the programs that are being implemented, the need that the executive has for parliamentary support. Because I was in that position, I knew what I wanted Parliament to assist me to do. I wanted the budget to go through Parliament after a due debate and scrutiny by Parliament, but also to be approved in time for us to start implementing our programs at the beginning of the year, because we have so many people that look up to government for support. A large size of our population, for example, relies on safety net programs for support. We experience a lot of disasters, droughts and floods. We have to ensure that the schools are staffed and the hospitals are supplied with medication and so forth. So I do understand, you know, the executive when they come to Parliament. But I also do understand what I needed from Parliament when I was in the executive. And therefore, I am able to make an effort to address the both sides.
It's a great advantage having had that perspective. What do you hope personally to get from your week here in Geneva this week, attending the IPU events both yesterday with women speakers and the rest of the week with speakers from all over the world?
Yes, I want to be able to share our views, express the needs that we have, both for support from the IPU and cooperation with other parliaments and multilateral institutions, and also to learn from the experience of other people. I think that's important. We grow a lot from that. Our country is one of the youngest countries. We used to be the youngest until South Sudan. And we wanted to be able to learn from the mistakes of others so that we don't repeat them, and also to learn from their successes so that we can hit the ground running. That's practically what we want, to make sure that the things that we consider are important, we share with the others so that that way we influence the global agenda, but we also learn from others. And we forge alliances, partnerships. So hopefully after this, we would do, continue with discussions and cooperation programs with other countries, other parliaments, and multilateral organizations.
Very well said. And one of the things that we hope that speakers get out of these events. Being a speaker also involves navigating complex challenges. You haven't been in the role for that long, but what have you found challenging in your time holding the gavel?
Well, when you have a country like Namibia, small as it is, and you have up to 12 political parties in parliament, and all of them have their own manifestos, they have their own views about how things are supposed to be done, it's difficult to get people to reach a consensus, because it's always preferred that you don't go for a vote. But even where you have to go for a vote, it's sometimes difficult to get people to just agree, okay, now we have tried to sell our ideas to each other and we have failed. Now we have to vote. Yeah, and to just manage the emotions of people, because of course they are leaders and they want to be calm and orderly. But sometimes the debate gets very emotional. And you have now to balance between ensuring that you enforce the rules without stifling debate, you know. That is a challenge. But I have also observed that the more we assist the new MPs to understand the rules, the more we get to know each other as parliamentarians, beyond being representatives of our political parties, that we are just Namibians and we want the same things for our country. And we are human beings and we want the same things. It gets a little bit easier, but it never really, the challenge never goes away.
It's so refreshing to hear you talk about the human dimension of the role and seeing your colleagues and the opposition parties as Namibians and human beings rather than adversaries. As I mentioned to you before we started, I was watching Namibian TV when the vote was counted and you were announced as the winner of the speakership in March this year, I believe. And the composure that you had when the announcement was made, what was going through your head when you were made the first female speaker of Namibia?
Yes, I always say that when I first started out in politics, I was 27. And I was a head of a national planning institution. And I always said that when I was told that I was to be appointed into that position, I was calm because I was young. And, you know, young people have this sense of invincibility. You are never scared of challenges. But as you grow, you start to recognize the challenges that come with opportunities. So when you are deployed into a position, you don't look at it as a career advancement. You don't look at it as an issue of status and prestige. You see it as a responsibility. And you start to think about what you are going to do to live up to the expectation of the people. How are you going to contribute to the transformation of our society? Especially when for the first time we have a parliament that is more politically diverse than we have ever had. We have more political parties in our National Assembly this time around. And also the seats of our governing party have reduced. We used to have two-thirds majority, and then we fell short of two-thirds majority by only 1 percentage point, and now we are at 53. So it means consensus building is important. In as much as we can still vote and we can get our way, I believe personally, and as my party does, that it's more important to build consensus, because we don't want to pass a bill today by bulldozing it through voting only for somebody to come and try to claw back what they lost yesterday, tomorrow, and the day after. And you cannot make progress to really implement the things that you have agreed upon.
And looking forward, are there any reforms or innovation that you'd like to see in the parliament under your leadership?
Yes, we have noted the importance or the significant value added by digitalization to lawmaking, to holding government to account, to even ensuring the participation of the communities that we serve in the process of lawmaking and of holding government accountable. So that is one of the things that we are aiming to do to leverage artificial intelligence in the process of lawmaking and the engaging communities. And we have also agreed to mainstream important things like climate change management, gender equality, and we have committed ourselves to look at the model laws that have been developed at our SADC parliamentary forum so that we can align Namibia's laws to the best practices within the region and also on the continent.
So I want to finish up by speaking a little bit about something we've touched on already. As well as being a role model for women in Namibia, Namibia is something of a role model to the world, actually, with the number of women MPs and youth that you have in your parliament. So I have the statistics here. You have 7.3% of MPs 30 or under, which is more than double than the global average. And you have 40% women parliamentarians compared to the global average of 27%. Why do you think Namibia has been successful in encouraging both youth and women to embrace being a parliamentarian as a career?
Yes. Okay. First and foremost, when it comes to women, we are fortunate that during the time that we were struggling for national independence and we had to wage an armed struggle for decades, we had leaders, the majority of whom were men, but who were committed to gender equality. So after independence, the ruling party decided that we are going to have a 50-50 representation on the party list of candidates to parliament. And then they moved beyond that and they said it should be what we call zebra style. So it means if number one is a man, number two has to be a woman. Because sometimes you find that our male compatriots, when you say it's 50-50, all the top positions are to men and all the women are at the bottom. So that is one reason how we were able to get more women in parliament. Unfortunately, that system does not apply in all the political parties. So what we are advocating for as women MPs is to get our political parties to agree to a legislative reform that would require all political parties to have gender balance and hopefully also zebra style. And secondly, when it comes to young people, maybe because our leaders who led the struggle for national independence started out when they were very young. So they do have an appreciation of the value that young people bring to the table. That is how I was appointed as Director General of the National Planning Commission, which is the development coordinating body at the age of 27, by a president who was more than 60. So I think that's really what we attribute it to. But we also attribute it to the support of other countries and organizations that have enabled us to utilize, to leverage the resources that we have to educate our young people, the fact that we could learn from other countries in terms of the laws they have to make sure that we have democracy, not only on paper, but in practice, that enable young people to make it through their political parties to be on the list to be members of parliament.
I love the zebra analogy. That's fantastic. What advice would you give to women, and particularly young women, who would be looking to enter politics and follow a similar career path?
Yeah, what I would tell them is actually to say that they have always been leaders. They don't just recognize that. I remember, and I always like to tell these stories, when I was graduating from university and I was returning to Namibia, my friend with whom I was attending asked me, "Sarah, would you consider a life in politics?" I said, "Never." And then she said, "You never say never." I said, "Never. I will never be in politics." So because I thought that politics was so boring, it's all so complicated, it's something I don't know anything about, although I went into exile at a young age. So what women need to do is to believe in themselves, because they have been leaders from the time that they are young girls to the time that they are mothers to the time that they are community leaders, and therefore they can bring that leadership capability to national level and local authorities and regions. They only have to believe in themselves, and that if they make a mistake, it's an opportunity to learn. They should pick themselves up and just move ahead.
And what was it that changed your mind to enter politics?
It's practically because I was just presented with this opportunity. Or maybe I would say, maybe it was more so because I went into exile as a child of 12 years. And so I was raised by my political party. My political party was not only a political mentor, it was a father and mother to me as a refugee girl living in camps in foreign countries. And so when this leader called upon me and said, I'm thinking to appoint you in this position, I understood him to be saying, I would like you to carry out this task. And when your mother say, I would like you to fetch some water for me, you don't say no. But not only that, I trusted that he's going to hold my hand and mentor me through the process. And I'm where I am today because I was mentored by him and other leaders.
That's fascinating. So you feel that the experience you had as a child really informed your career as a politician?
Yes.
Brilliant. I think that's a fantastic note to end on. Madam Speaker, thank you so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in as we wrap up. It's been a pleasure welcoming you to the IPU House of Parliaments. If anyone would like to have more information about the issues we discussed today and the role of the speaker, you can go to ipu.org or follow us on social media.